So we must be ready to fight in Vietnam, but the ultimate victory will depend upon the hearts and the minds of the people who actually live out there.
Hearts and Minds, a documentary about the Vietnam War, created quite a stir when it was released in 1974. Although it won an Oscar, it was bitterly attacked by conservatives. In the context of the Iraq War, the film seems as relevant as ever, and last Friday, a restored version of it opened at Cinema Village. A DVD version is also available from the Criterion Collection, and I'm delighted that all of those things bring Peter Davis, the director of Hearts and Minds, back to the show today. Hello. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, Leonard.
When did you start working on Hearts and Minds?
Began work in 1972.
So the war was still going on.
The war was had just become our longest war when I started.
And what was your background at the time?
I had made documentary films for CBS News for several years, one of which had been kind of cause celeb. It was about the Defense Department's propaganda. It was called The Selling of the Pentagon.
And a very famous documentary. Well, when television did that sort of thing.
Yeah. Anyway, that got me eventually involved with what became Hearts and Minds, and it took 2 years to make, 1972 to 1974.
And could you have done this for commercial television at the time?
No. No, and you couldn't do it for commercial television now because commercial television always demands a correspondent, a reporter on air, on screen, telling you what to think.
You also, so you were doing it initially out of a major studio, weren't you, Columbia Pictures?
Columbia Pictures paid for it, although they then refused to release it. And Warner Brothers came forward after two people, Henry Jaglom and Howard Zucker, raised the money to buy it away from Columbia and give it to Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers released it.
What did Columbia tell you? They must have known what you were doing when you started.
They were afraid that it would hurt their other movies, and they didn't know what I was doing when I started because Bert Schneider's production company, for whom I was making Hearts and Minds, had a deal with Columbia in which Columbia could not ask to see script. Well, there was no script for Hearts and Minds, but rough cuts, anything. They just had to take the finished movie.
Well, how do you go about even approaching a vast subject like this?
With difficulty. I mean, it takes a long time, just like writing a book or anything that really counts to you takes. And I struggled for several months not knowing what kind of conversation I wanted to have with my audience, who, after all, had been bombarded with pictures of the war. And, you know, and Donovan Campbell goes a long way in his book, Joker One, your previous guest, towards combating this. But we tend to recall war in terms of glory. And we have monuments. Washington is littered with salutes to our fallen heroes. The Vietnam War monument is a little bit different. That's a much more solemn monument. But most of the time, you know, we have statues of generals, admirals, and so forth. So I needed to combat that and try to engage an audience, to talk to an audience and have the audience talk back to me, which they're doing today. And that's what's so heartening about the consequence of war.
It is interesting to look at what happened when the Vietnam Memorial was proposed. Many people thought that that was a brilliant solution, and some people complained that they wanted a statue of some soldier helping another soldier because they wanted Vietnam to be like other wars. And in this movie, we get a sense of still how people felt differently about the war. The film combines stock footage, film clips from feature films, interviews that you conducted yourself. Nowadays, many films use that approach, but I get the feeling that it was kind of innovative at the time.
Well, I don't want to claim too
that
much
you invented
for it.
It.
I don't want to claim anything like that. There are wonderful filmmakers working before me whom I admire and continue to admire very much. And I love what's going on now in the documentary community. And the way Hearts and Minds seems to be, well, first sort of auditioning for a new audience in terms of the reviews. Like the reviewers, in a way, are the people who decide whether this thing is still worth seeing, and seems to have passed through those auditions and now is having a conversation with a fresh audience and also some returnees, I think.
In the context of the other wars that we have engaged in since.
Yes.
How similar do you see the story you tell with the story that's being told today?
I covered the war in Iraq for The Nation magazine, and both the differences and the similarities are striking. The differences are very obvious. It's a different part of the world. Oil is something that's very largely at stake. The whole Middle East, the cauldron of the Middle East, is very much at stake in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And we forget that because we don't know geography very well, and we certainly didn't know it when we went to war in Iraq, there's only one country in between Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's Iran, the country that we in the previous administration certainly demonized. So anyway, the differences are striking, but the similarities are depressing. We went to both wars, lied to by our leaders, both Vietnam and Iraq. And then once there, we were ignorant of the country's traditions, position with geopolitical position. I mean, we thought that the Vietnamese were allies of the Chinese, and they hate the Chinese. In fact, they fought a war against the Chinese almost as soon as we got out. So, I mean, and the same thing in Iraq, and it wasn't just ignorance in Iraq, because when I was there, you could see this shortly after the war started in Iraq. It's the arrogance of ignorance that really sank us for the first few years in Iraq.
One of the big differences is the way we relate to the locals, partly, I guess, because of the different cultures. But in this film, we have a lot of consorting with locals, including some shocking footage that you have from a brothel. I don't know how the heck you got
prostitutes.
That.
Well, we were following these two guys around, Charlie and Jerry, and they said, well, here's what we really like to do, after we'd been in bars with them and so forth and interviewed them a fair amount. They said, here's what we really like to do, and went into what was euphemistically called a massage parlor, but it's essentially a place for prostitutes, a whorehouse.
And people were very open. But you seem to have had access to every memorable image that have come out of the war. Everybody made it available to you. The pictures that we know, the shooting of a captured Viet Cong, the child running down the road nude because she had been napalmed and her skin is partly peeling off.
Yeah, we're more familiar with those particular images as still photographs, which were very famous photographs. I didn't even know that they existed as film. And of course, when we found them as film, our great film researcher, a woman named Del Byrne, when she found it, I realized that we were going to be able to convey the war not as a series of issues, not as dry facts, but as experience. And I think that's what you have to do in a war movie, is convey it as experience and also consequence. Don't just say these people are heroes, you know, they're fighting for their country. Because in many ways, a Frenchman said this to me while I was filming. I didn't use this particular film that he said, but he said that the American soldiers who died in Vietnam are the victims, not of the Vietnamese, but of American propaganda.
My guest is Peter Davis, who's the director of Hearts and Minds, which is now playing at the Cinema Village on 12th Street between University Place and 5th Avenue. But you do give us all sides of the discussion. In fact, you talk to General William Westmoreland.
Yes.
And how did you react when he told you about the way Orientals feel about death?
With amazement and disbelief. And right after he said that, he yelled, cut. And he said, "No, I want to really say what I mean." So I assumed that he was going to completely change that and say, "Oh, you know, people, superficial differences, but they are the same." Once you, so we started filming again, and he said the same thing: the Oriental doesn't place a high value on human. And then we ran out of film. We should have checked it. So I thought, well, surely while we're changing film magazines, and that was in the pre-digital age, surely he will rethink this and say something bland. The third time he said the Oriental doesn't put the same high value on human life. And this footage, when I had it, I realized it was going to explode in the film wherever we used it. And we tried it a number of different places, finally decided to put it where you can see best the wages of war, which are killing and dying.
Another person who gave you a surprising interview is Walt Whitman Rostow.
Walt Rostow was an unreconstructed advocate of the domino theory, which is that if Vietnam becomes communist, all the other countries around it will become communist because the Chinese, the very weight of the Chinese, will do that. And actually, of course, that didn't happen at all.
But he treated you with total contempt on camera.
He was contemptuous of me for asking him after he had said, well, the Vietnamese, I've seen nothing that indicates they want to be communists. And I said, well, why do they need us then? And he said, I can't believe you asked this goddamn silly, sophomoric question. His lawyers, when they sued later to block the release of Hearts and Minds, called it an impertinent question. And it seemed to me, well, that's a funny word for them to have chosen, since it's the most pertinent question in my view.
Another shocker was something that Lieutenant George Coker told the kids at a parochial school in New Jersey about what was wrong with Vietnam.
Well, he found it a very ugly country because of the people.
Yeah, he said it's a beautiful country.
Nice country if it weren't for the people there. And there was their teacher, a nun, was standing right behind him when he's saying this. So he's, in a way, inculcating a new generation.
Now, this is near the end of the war, so you did find any number of people who had been supporters initially, like Clark Clifford, and Daniel,
yes,
Ellsberg?
Leonard, I didn't talk to anybody or use anybody in the final film who had not either fought the war or once been for it. I wasn't interested in parading peace activists in front of a camera to preach to the converted. I really wanted to know why we fought there, what we did there, and what the doing in turn did to us.
Do you envision a similar film being made about Iraq?
I love the films that are being made about Iraq. My Country, My Country by Laura Poitras happens to be my favorite so far, but I haven't seen all of them. And Iraq in Fragments is a wonderful film. Both of those, incidentally, were nominated for an Academy Award, but it was impossible for them to win because they were up against Al Gore.
Well, I also get the feeling that it's less likely for a film that has a real political position. It takes a political position, although I'm not sure that Hearts and Minds really takes the position.
No,
the audience takes the position. But that,
that's what I hope.
The Academy Awards, they kind of shy away from those films these days.
They do, but the films I mentioned are not essentially agenda films at all. They're experiential. Hearts and Minds is experiential.
Did you ask yourself why some people held on to their opinions and beliefs so strongly, while others did change their minds?
Oh, yes. There's a family in Hearts and Minds in Concord, Massachusetts, where the mother is in great pain. The father, incidentally, who's a descendant of Ralph Waldo Emerson, the father has to say, though his son has died in Vietnam, has to say, this is all worth it. I mean, if you say, oh, it was always a terrible idea, which, incidentally, some of the parents of Iraqi casualties are saying. But during the Vietnam War, the answer seemed to be, when patriotism was challenged, to give it another boost, another dose of patriotism.
And his wife is standing there with this model airplane in her hand, and it's heartbreaking.
That's right. That model airplane, just like the one that her son flew in.
Now, the film has been restruck from the original negative?
Yes.
It really looks sharp and crisp.
Well, I have to agree with you, especially since I didn't do it. The remastering of the film was done by the Motion Picture Academy and their great archivist, a man named Mike Pogorzelski. He seems to have re-examined Hearts and Minds frame by frame and come up with really a better looking, but even more important for a documentary, a better sounding film than was released 3 decades ago.
What's it like for you to watch this film 35 years later? Had you watched it a lot in the intervening years?
No, I have not watched it a lot. I've been doing other work. When I watch it again, I try to think how an audience today is seeing it and what kind of a conversation that film is having with today's audience. And the whole idea of coming on with smuggling into a new generation an old truth, which is that those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it, as the philosopher Santayana said. So this is what I'm hoping for.
One of the things that I appreciated was that you put the whole thing in context. You don't begin with the Gulf of Tonkin. You begin with Harry Truman, and then you take us through the Eisenhower years and all of the reasons that the United States got involved little by little and through JFK's presidency, so that we understand that this wasn't something that just some president decided to put us through.
Right. It's often
a little different than Iraq.
A little different from Iraq. Well, Iraq has been festering, I can tell by your smile that you think so too, for a long time, ever since the retreating British Empire created Iraq just out of the sand. Winston Churchill was involved in that. So if you were to make a film, such a film about Iraq, you'd have to go to the British, you'd have to go to American oil companies, you'd have to go to what Dick Cheney always wanted long before he was in power.
And have to talk about the Baathists and everything else that has happened in this incredible story. But the story of Vietnam, I can't imagine it being told better than it is in Hearts and Minds. My great thanks to Peter Davis, who directed. The film is showing at the Cinema Village at 12th Street between University Place and Fifth Avenue. Also available as a DVD from the Criterion Collection.
Yes.
From this new print
as
well?
Oh, very much from the new print, yes.
If you have a nice high-definition television set, it almost feels like you're in the movie theater.
Yes. Well, I like to see it in a movie theater when you're with an audience, but yes.
Directors always prefer the movie theater experience. The rest of us sometimes prefer to have it at home.
I'm very grateful to Criterion, as I am, for releasing it in DVD, as I am to Henry Jaglom for re-releasing it in 35 millimeter.
And I'm grateful to you, Peter, for coming back on our show. Peter Davis, thank you so much.
Thank you, Leonard. It's great to see you again.